Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire with Mark Wilson.
Welcome along to Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire. It's going to be another busy, busy 2 hours of sport. We've got the Super League Dream Team to discuss this afternoon. Are you happy with... I haven't put your mic up yet, Scully. So if you want to be quiet just for a moment. We have got the Super League Dream Team. We'll pick the bones out of that one. We know the final four. We've known that for a while. It's Warrington, Wigan, Hull and St Helens. What we didn't know was what order they were going to be in. We do now. Warrington Wolves on Thursday, Wigan against Hull on Friday, and the £1 million game is Hull Kingston Rovers against the Salford Red Devils after Huddersfield. Well, did that drop goal go over, or didn't it? Quite frankly, who cares? It's on the scoreboards. As always, a busy, busy show, and here to help us, Phil Kaplan, editor of 4020 Magazine. The big guy, sorry, the legend that is Gary Schofield. He's here now. For those that don't know, Gary rings me up every day, normally about 6:30 in the morning, and announces himself the legend. But you've changed your phone technique now, haven't you? It's the legend OBE now, isn't it? That's how you announce yourself.
I do indeed, and so could you please address me as that, Mr. Wilson, please?
No, you're all right. And I'm pleased to say we have got in a couple of special guests tonight, one of whom has joined us on Radio Yorkshire before, and that's Dr. Alan Johnson. Alan, are you well?
Yes, very well. Thank you for having us on again.
Good man. And you've brought a guest with you today.
That's right. My colleague here, Dr. Al Daoud. Yeah. Would you like to introduce, sir?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Dr. Marwan Aldwood.
And tell us what you do in your day job, because you two guys have set up your own business now, haven't you,
yep,
in terms of sports medicine, I guess. What does that entail?
Yes, we've started a new sports medicine clinic in Leeds called PHIL, which is Performance Health Innovations Limited, and we deal with mental health, well-being, sports performance, injury, rehabilitation of athletes, or Bob the Builder, anyone really. We do it all. My background is sports medicine, so I work for England Rugby League, as well as having done other sports in the past. And other than that, I'm a normal bloke.
Normal bloke. You're looking forward to the end of the season. Obviously, England going to be in action.
Yeah.
A great expectation around England now as well.
Yeah, it was a great result, the test against the Kiwis. And since then, yeah, we've been new coach, some new staff. So it's been kind of getting to know each other and preparing hard, really, for a good result, hopefully.
So this is an exclusive, because we actually found someone that might have spoken to Wayne Bennett, because we've not heard sight
sure
of him.
I thought when you said Marwan was coming in, we were doing this in the wrestle room. Mm. It was the man from Salford. It will lead up to the £1 million game.
Have you spoken to Wayne Bennett?
Yeah.
All right.
He arranged a...
How do you arrange that then? How did you do that then?
How did I do that?
Yeah, when nobody else got.
I just got a call.
Did you?
Yeah.
Mm.
No, he called the staff and the players for a meeting. When he was round.
We know he had a meeting, yeah, so you was at that meeting, was
yeah.
it? Right, okay.
So
right.
We got to meet him, right. And he just kind of introduced himself and what his ideas are. He's a good bloke.
Do you want to tell us then what his ideas are, because nobody else knows?
Were you impressed? Because obviously he comes with this aura already attached to him, and we know he can be quite intimidating from a media point of view. Although, like all the people that supposedly are intimidating, if you ask them a straight question, you've never had a problem getting an answer from them. But you saw him in a slightly different environment. Did he impress you in that same way?
He's definitely got an aura about him. He comes across as someone who's really experienced, knows what he's doing. I guess his track record speaks for itself, doesn't it? His main message to all of us was, just do your best from now, which was a few months ago, till what's coming up, and try and reach the heights you never got to before, and he'll take us there.
Very good, very good. So, Alan, you've been in before, we know you're back, you've been involved obviously with the Bradford Bulls, you're involved in Rugby League. We got chatting away from work, if you like. We've got a worry in this studio about medicine in drug. Well, maybe not medicine, prescription drugs in sport. We feel there's an issue there. We're hearing more and more stories. Should we be right to be worried about this, do you feel?
I think you're right. I think it's an issue. It's been identified in a range of places. The New Zealand Rugby League team, I don't know if you remember, I think back in 2013, 2014, called it their prescription pills problem and described it, in their words, as a spreading plague. They feel it affected their, I think it was their semi-final performance at the World Cup that year. So I think it's definitely an issue, and it's something that we should be able to talk about and explore today, and hopefully we're going to get a chance to do that with ex-pro journalist and your two doctors here today.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, Phil, we're getting more and more worried now, aren't we? Because we feel the players are being asked to do more and more. And, you know, they are only human, aren't they?
I think, again, we need to take into account the fact that this is a real high collision sport, and the damage that's being done with impact is, we've talked about it with various players, it's the equivalent to whiplash in a car crash. You don't get over something like that quickly. You now have fully professional players who need to turn up at 7 o'clock every morning and train within that wrestle room type collision environment. The impact of merely playing the game, they should have 3 days off before they start again, but they can't. You understand that livelihoods are at stake, there are contracts up for grabs. It doesn't take much for somebody to say, the inflammation will go down if you take one of these. It's the addiction side of thing, I think, more than the prescription side of thing that we should be worried about. There's issues about the internet, how easy it is to get hold of things these days. You don't have to go through registered doctors if you want to self-prescribe yourself. We published a book probably 3 years ago, the autobiography of Malcolm Alker, one of the perpetual motion type hookers of the modern era, and the first chapter is all about the worries he had for himself of prescription drug addiction. You know, should he be driving under that conditions, you know, and all of that kind of thing. And I think that is one of the big elephants in the room at the moment. I don't know how you solve it, because if it's a prescription drug and it's legal, you're in a very dangerous area. The addiction side of things, I mean, Scoey again being a top level sportsmen get addicted. They get addicted to winning, they get addicted to team bonding, they get addicted to alcohol in Scoey's case, but I think the issue is, how do you legislate against something that's legal in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I'd see it as part of that package of things you described, as part of the increasing awareness we have about player welfare. You touched on things there like concussion, mental health, recovery from periods after the game. And I'd see prescription drugs. I'll pick up on one thing maybe. A lot of prescription drugs are addictive. So you know, I think it's not either or. A lot of the things that are being prescribed, whether it's painkillers or medications to help with sleep or muscle pain, a lot of those are addictive.
Well, as I say, obviously, I played a game at age 11. I played for 16 years, and I know Phil was mentioning, you know, in today's game, and okay, it may have changed a little bit, certainly when you look at the wrestling and all this sort of thing, but, you know, in our day, you know, it was pretty tough, you know, and it's pretty contact, and we didn't need these sort of prescriptions, and we didn't need these sort of tablets. So why all of a sudden now, as prescription drugs come into our sport, you know, for the body, for, because the big call down in all sports is rehabilitation, and you know, that seems to be more now. It seems to have more importance at times than what it does for playing. So mainly, for what reason do they really need these tablets for?
I think if I can just come out, I think the sport has evolved in terms of the level it's at and the training that they do and the impacts that they go through. A significant, as you said yourself, in terms of, you know, these guys going through head-on collision car crashes, and not taking anything away from how things might have been before, but I think in general, both codes of rugby, the impact force that the player's going through is more, and the implications you get that as a club doctor when you're there is a lot of pressure, because there's a lot of pressure to win, a lot of pressure to get players fit. Recovery is a lot of pressure to get players recovered quicker. So players feel pressure from a lot of areas, and would they rather, just like anybody else, if someone can say, I can give you a tablet, or there's a tablet that exists which will help you get better quicker, they'll take that option rather than, you know what, you need to go through all the gruel of like the rehab and all that type of stuff. So it's a difficult problem, and you're right, it does exist, but there's lots of things that we can do as well as medics on the front line dealing with these kind of issues. One of the things we do talk about is educating the players. So what are the side effects of these medications, particularly on performance?
At this moment in time, I don't see them taking it on board, do they?
Well, it depends. It depends how you set your stall out. You know, each club and each group of players is different. You know, they're not just a homogenous group. They're all different, and each club will have its own way of working. So if you've got a manager that's on board with all this kind of stuff, then it works really well. If I said to you now, this drug, Tramadol, for example, is going to slow your reactions down, or for example, it's going to impair your...
Well, because I was just going to say today, Tramadol, when I took over at Barrow, there was two players just constantly asking for tramadol. Why would they be constantly... Every time I was at the ground, and I was there three or four times a week, they were constantly asking the physio and the doctor for tramadol. And they were getting it. And they were getting it. So, first of all, how was he allowed of it? And secondly, surely, so we look at player welfare, the amount of times they was asking for it, and they was quite taking it quite openly, and a lot of it. How is that right for a player when surely a doctor or anybody, the physios from that club, is saying, hold on here, you had so-and-so on Tuesday, you're asking for more now on Thursday, you're asking for more on Saturday morning, and asking for more after the game on a Sunday. Surely that's not right, is it?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the doctor in my job, the sports psychiatrist, has a job to if you like, take responsibility for
his
prescribing and to manage those requests. You asked about the changing prevalence, and Marwan told us about the perhaps the changing force of the collision. I think there might be another couple of factors in there. I guess the culture has changed in terms of probably alcohol use post-match, and perhaps the culture's changed a little bit in terms of the UK anti-doping screenings for other drugs, for sort of illegal drugs and performance-enhancing drugs. So I'm wondering if that causes players to be more likely to turn to prescription drugs, drugs that are legal and are permitted. And I think the other issue might be to do with players from different countries, from different backgrounds. There are different expectations in different parts of the world where we play rugby league for the prescription of post-match medications. And I think you can see that sometimes in clubs that have players from different backgrounds in different places.
Mm. Do we need to make a distinction here between performance-enhancing and performance-enabling? Because when you use the word drugs, obviously people assume, you know, it's the Olympics and it's Ben Johnson. But actually, these are enabling players to play, and the issue is not that they shouldn't be taking these drugs, it's the amount of these drugs they should be taking.
Yeah, I mean, these drugs are not illegal. They don't enhance performance. If anything, they detriment performance, which I think the first thing you're saying about... if they come to the doctor and say, can I have some tramadol or whatever else, or some morphine or whatever it's going to be, if you said to that player, do you know this is potentially going to impact on your performance to the negative, then they might start to think twice about it. But that first message doesn't get out, because there's a culture of just get the pain better. But I think focusing just on the drugs and the medications is probably a small part of the bigger problem. And the bigger problem, if you look at an athlete in full or a player in full, you know, what's happening at home? What do they eat? How much caffeine are they taking on board? Are they taking tramadol because they've got pain or because it helps them sleep? You know, there's lots of different reasons why people want to take medications. And even like sleeping tablets, you know, there's looking at the whole picture. And as an organisation, if you're part of a club, it's about having these chats with the players. You know, you're right in terms of if you just, as a doctor, there's a lot of pressure, you know, so and as a physio you've been a lot of pressure, but if you just say, right, blanket, not, you're not giving any medications, they'll just get them from somewhere else.
So forgiving my ignorance, is this the kind of thing that would go on in a public gym? That it's not just confined to elite sportsmen? If you know, is there a culture that when these guys might go and do training with their mates or in their off season, are they being tempted by these things outside of the jurisdiction of doctors?
I mean, I think it's something that affects the public per se, you know, not just the athletic public, if you like. We're talking about drugs like benzodiazepines or Z drugs, things like diazepam, as well as painkillers like tramadol. And benzodiazepines are used by about 5% of the population. There's about 3 million people out there in our country using benzodiazepines and using them regularly. The question, as Marwan alluded to, really, are they indicated for the right condition? Some people are using tramadol for sleep rather than its indication for pain. Are they being used in the right quantity and to the right extent? With my work at rugby clubs via State of Mind or with Phil, I found really the best approach is a consistent approach with, you could say, some flexibility, but minimum flexibility. You need to have a good relationship between the player, the sports medicine doctor such as Marwan, and the sports psychiatrist such as myself. You all need to be working well together. But there are times whereby these medications are used and are helpful and are indicated. I think it's just about having that conversation with the player. I've had one player who has OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, and a lot of players post-match go through a sort of a rumination, a replaying of the match in their head. How did I do? Why did I make that pass? Why didn't I make that pass? And they run through that in their head, but for some people that affects more than others. And I can think of one player who had OCD, and he would just sit up for hours and hours after the match running through whether he played well or poorly. He'd obsessively and recurrently go around the match in his head. And for him, Zopiclone was useful in a short course for a specific indication in that person. So I think having a blanket ban isn't helpful. And as you mentioned, these things can be picked up very cheaply online, so it's ineffective. But having a sort of coordinated approach between the player, the sports medicine doctor and the psychiatrist, and having a sort of an agreement about the indication, the use, the frequency, how long you'd use it for, I think that's the way forwards.
Mm. Does the governing body have enough guidelines on this? Does it do enough? Because they must know, in the same way that we get to hear things, that this is an issue within the sport. We have had instances of players testing positive for prescription drugs. Does the sport itself police itself?
So, I mean, I don't represent the Rugby Football League, but they do organise meetings with medics, as well as a lot of things, a lot of educational meetings with players and different clubs. Certainly from a medic point of view, they're quite clear, really, in terms of trying to change the attitude of doctors as well, because I think there's an issue with doctors prescribing these, giving these medications. So they've done a lot to try and change the thinking of medics and trying to get them to think about some of the other issues, which is why, like, someone like Alan's really invaluable, because there's a lot of issues that might be going on behind that player or that club that leads them to then have a problem with an addictive medication.
How much of this as well is because sport is played in a very macho culture? You can't show a sign of weakness, you may not even mention it to your teammates that you're, perhaps seeing the doctor outside of hours, or you know another doctor that will, or you've got a friend who can get you something. How do you break that kind of a cycle?
Yeah, I think that's something that affects all people, in particular all men. And as we're talking about a male game, and perhaps in some places more of a macho culture, then I think you're right, that's a factor. Something that's worked in the past is having a close relationship between the players and the doctor or the psychiatrist, so having a psychiatrist in-house. I was the first rugby league psychiatrist, and I'm still the first rugby league psychiatrist, so I've yet to make much more progress with that. But having someone in-house helps to build that relationship, build that trust with the player. State of mind, of course, I need to represent them today. They're doing great work. We're producing guidance on things like addictions, such as gambling, as well as mental health problems, as well as medication use. I think it's about breaking down that stigma and having that regularity of input, which we attempt to do via state of mind and all the promotional work that we do. But we still have a long way to go, I think you're right.
But also as well, just going back to mind, I'm trying to take this all in. Excuse me, lad, but I'm from Belisle, so I'm not the most intelligent of fellas. But like, going back to mind, we mentioned alcohol, because in all sport there's still a drinking culture, and it may not be as open as what it used to be, say, in my day. But like, after our games, like, we didn't pop pills, to take the pain away or for us to sleep. We would be looking at having 8 to 10 pints, that makes us sleep. So, and what I'm saying from our day, I don't find or hear too many of ex-players from our era being alcoholics and down and outs and whatever, not addicted to alcohol. But what I'm hearing now, certainly, with these prescription drugs that are getting to players, they're getting addicted to it. So, okay, you could advise me a little bit more. Is alcohol as bad as what tablets are, or tablets better for you for sleep and for pain?
There was a recent paper published about all illicit drugs, actually, from ecstasy, cannabis, alcohol, and it looked at both the harmfulness and the level of addiction. So two different things. Some drugs are very harmful but not addictive. Some drugs are very addictive but not harmful in terms of the physical harm they cause. I would say alcohol is up there. So the substances we're talking about things like codeine or tramadol, which are both opiates. And so, for example, heroin is another opiate, more potent opiate. But they're all addictive medications, all opiates. We're talking about medications like benzodiazepines, which are addictive, and medications like benzodiazepines work in quite a similar way to alcohol. They work on similar receptors in similar parts of the brain. So alcohol, yeah, is up there as being an addictive chemical. And in the same way, and what does addiction mean? Addiction means that you're developing a dependence on something, that you need more of it. So perhaps you finished off having 10 pints, but maybe you started off having a couple of quiet pints. And so tolerance means that you need more of the substance to have the same effect. So perhaps people might drink more or use more tablets. It means that you get withdrawal symptoms if you don't have that substance. So for alcohol, you might get shakes or sweats, and you might get similar symptoms with some of these medications. And so, really, to answer your question, I'd say, yeah, these things are all addictive. Alcohol is up there as being as addictive as some of the benzodiazepines, and it needs a similar sort of approach. I see quite a few players, personally, who have dependence problems from gambling to alcohol, substances and prescription medications, and the symptoms are often very similar. It impacts on people's physical health, mental health, their lifestyle. it has negative consequences for them. They need more of the substance to have the same effect. Mm. They have withdrawal symptoms if they don't get it. And so, I'd see them in a similar ballpark.
Right. Because I'm just saying this as well, because at Leeds, we brought a fitness conditioner over. A guy called Edgar Curtis, Dean Bell brought him from the Auckland Warriors. And he was listening to weights, you know, and we just had a new £25,000 refit. Anyway, it was all machines. Anyway, he looked at that and said, no good. We needed the loose weights and that sort of thing. But also as well, every weight session, we had to take three different little sachets of tablets, four in each, and I says, I don't take tablets, I'm not having them. Mm. You have got to take them. So I said, I'm not having them. I said, first of all, tell me what they're for. And he wouldn't tell me. So I said, well, I don't take tablets, I'm not taking them. You know, it's quite simple. My philosophy was, you know, if I don't agree with it, any tablets wouldn't make me play any better, I can reassure you. But because you wouldn't explain to me the reason why I was supposed to be taking them, you know, I said, well, first of all, I'm not taking them anyway, but you won't explain to me when I'm asking that reason why I should be taking these. So why would that be then? Why would he not explain? I'm going back here now 20 years as well. Why would he not explain to us what it was for?
That's gone off the scale now in terms of these pre-workout or pre-game drinks and recipes.
No, these were tablets. These were tablets.
Yeah, whether it's a tablet or now it's dissolved into a solution. So that's kind of.
Yeah, why wouldn't he tell me what it was for?
Maybe they didn't know.
Well.
Or maybe, as I say. Yeah, maybe, I don't know, I didn't tell you, but the point, I think, what I've got from what you're saying is that now that's gone even worse, because there's all kind of drinks that you can have, which are supplement drinks, and that's, you know, that's in mainstream, you know, gym goers and everything are taking pre-workout shakes, during workout shakes, post-workout shakes, and most of these drinks are just full of caffeine, other things, sugar and other things as well, to increase performance, and I think, as a player, you're part of a squad, you're given these things. There are the professionals who try to get the right balance of these kind of things. But, you know, as a player, if I say to you, here's one tablet and it's going to make you better, and you've got access to 10 of them, you just take 10 at once. You say, well, I'll just take 10. That's the kind of culture we've got, because that's how most people play sport. That's just how you think, isn't it?
Because it's interesting, isn't it? Because there's two sides to this. Alan, I guess, from the psychology point of view, you're dealing with everyday human beings. We look at rugby league players as these big heroes, and I guess as the rugby league doctor dealing with the injuries, Marwan, that's what you are. They're not normal people that you're dealing with either. They're big beasts, they're big fit men, and they want to get fitter and fitter. But on the other side of it, you're dealing with a guy who plays rugby for England. He's just like me and Phil, who's got his worries about paying his mortgage and everything else. So it's a strange one, isn't it, this? I don't know. It's how you look at it. I worry about these players. I think they would play... There's some rugby league players that play every hour of the day if they were asked to do that. And there's others, you're both dealing with two halves of the same thing,
aren't you? You're not saying to play every hour of the day. They wouldn't be able to do that because naturally your body wouldn't do that, so they would be on tablets galore, wouldn't they, to be honest with you? They would be on tablets galore.
Where is the line? Who's telling the player no? Is anyone actually doing that, or is it, if you want to take the tablets, you can play? How does it work?
But there's a bigger issue about not playing this week. Who tells a player that thinks he's fit and can play that actually it's in his best long-term interest that he stands down and doesn't play? Does that come from the doctor? Does it come from the psychologist? Does it come from the coach? Do we educate the player themselves? Because we have this debate every single week that I think we're overexposing our players to too much rugby in the current environment. And the danger for that is that players... We hear it from every coach every week. They hardly train this week, they're playing injured, they're being needled in the dressing room. I don't want to go and force a player to have to do something that seems to me unnatural in the name of my entertainment. So who has the overriding call on whether a player is injured or not and shouldn't play?
Well, so if it's in terms of from a doctor's point of view, the only way that you could... the only way you could actually... for someone, and Alan probably know more than this than me, would be if they didn't have the capacity, it was a mental health issue, they didn't have the capacity, so they couldn't make their own decision for themselves, if they were incapacitated. Otherwise, if a player has got an injury, it is up to them. You can give them the advice, but you cannot make them do anything, you know, so they're an adult. You know, if they're an adult and they can make a decision, then it's their decision. But what ends up happening is that the medics, so like doctors and physios, will try and rest them as much as possible, so try and drag out recovery and give them as much recovery as possible. Obviously, from the other side, the coaching staff would want to get them as quick as possible and get them training more, get them in the game. So there ends up being this trade-off. The player stuck in the middle because the player wants to please the manager, you know, because he wants to train, he wants to train, he wants to play, he wants to be picked. So it's understandable. So, and it's a club who pays wages. So there's a bit of a slant towards having to kind of, you know, feign injury, or not feign, to pretend that you're not injured, you know, mm-hmm. to kind of just mm-hmm. crack on. So often we're in the kind of background trying to give advice. It depends on the seriousness of the problem that's there, you know. But I've had players, you know, who've been concussed. I mean, concussions are the whole ball game, but players you can't tell, you know, their elbow from another part of the body, and just want to carry on. You know, they don't even know which way's up, and they still want to keep going because they're just, this is a man, you know, they just want to keep going. So it's a tough one. What sometimes protects us as doctors is if the sport protects us. So in concussion, for example, the sport is now, we're protected, because if we now make a decision someone's concussed, the player, the manager, no one else has got any say in that whatsoever.
See, I think you've just hit on a massive issue, which I think links to exactly what we've seen this week and is incredibly worrying and annoying from the point of view of, we never define what duty of care is. So we've had two massive issues this week, I think, that we've said that there should be a 5-day rule between games. We forced the team to play after 4 days. And as a sport, a governing body, we've done that. That undermines everything you're trying to do with your protocols. The other thing is, we've sent a team out to play another side with 12 men. That cannot be right. And I think that's very frustrating. Anybody who really passionately cares about rugby league is really upset by this at the moment. Mm-hmm. Now, how can we call ourselves a sport that cares and help and support the work that you're doing if, as a governing body, we are prepared to sanction things like that, which go against all the principles you've just been talking about?
I think that's what I mean. I think the fact that you're describing, I don't know in detail the cases you're talking about, but it just illustrates to me that all of the pressures are in the direction of playing. The coach, the fans, the finances, the business side of the game, and very often the player themselves, who's just desperate to play, as Marwan described, to keep his place, to keep his reputation, to or very often just perform in the game that, you know, he loves, and that also, you know, pays
his
mortgage.
Next contract.
Exactly, yeah. And so I think all of the pressures are in that direction. All of the biases are towards playing, and often it's the doctor like Marwan who's trying to slow down that process, trying to stand in front of that tidal wave and make sure that we think about player welfare.
Are you seeing, Alan, more players now? Obviously we've got relegation, there are going to be players this weekend that are going to lose their job, their contract will be null and void, they're going to be worried. Obviously there's been more than the two teams involved this year so far. Is that becoming an issue, do you feel? Does that impact on player welfare?
Yeah, I think it does. You talked about the players being sort of superhuman, and very often they look like that physically, but they're mentally, socially, psychologically, they're often just like the rest of us. They have the same stresses, the same pressures. They're just as prone to episodes of low mood or anxiety. They're just as prone to, or if not more prone to, divorce, bereavement, all of the things that affect all of our lives. But they're doing their role in the public gaze. They're doing it openly and publicly, and here we are talking about it on the radio. And so whilst promotion relegation, I think, adds a lot of excitement, you know, to the end of the calendar, yes, it's certainly, I'm seeing one player at the moment for whom that's affecting, from one of the qualifying eight teams. And yes, certainly, because you can imagine, you don't have to be a psychiatrist to work this out. It has a role on his future earning capacity, his ability to do his job, the insecurity of his career and his club, his reputation. So yeah, it's just another stress to add to that list that affects people's mental health and causes stress.
So Marwan, then, obviously you're involved at England. How long have you been doing that?
So I kind of started off with the England Women's Programme, so I've probably got to put a shout out to them because I was their doc for a while. So we talk about blokes all the time here, but I'm sure they'd be want me to fly their flag. Mm-hmm. So I started that, and then went to the academy, then been with the seniors for a few years now.
Very good. So looking at it then, it is an exciting time for England. They have improved, I think, year on year, and it feels like we're going to get some success now. If there is a player injured during the series and he's referred to you and you'll make a decision on his fitness, who does that then go to? Does that go to Wayne Bennett? Does that go to someone else? How would it work? What's the process?
So we tend to do it as a team. So there'll be myself, there's another doctor involved, there's a physiotherapist, and we tend to work as a unit. So we'd jointly assess that player, and then speak to Wayne Bennett. That's kind of usually the way it would work. Or speak to the manager, whoever that would be. I mean, I'm not, as I said, yeah. I've not worked with Wayne Bennett, but usually, yeah, you'd speak to the manager, and you'd have a discussion about the level of fitness, and often these things aren't black and white. You know, if someone breaks their leg, then yeah, it's pretty easy. But most of these problems are more subtle, and there isn't black and white, so it's more about what's percentages and all that kind of stuff. So you have to have a discussion, and then, again, it depends on the relationship between the medics and the coaching staff in terms of how much that advice is heeded to. As I've been with the England team before with Steve McNamara as well, and there was a really positive relationship between the medics and the coaching staff, so it worked really well. And I'm hoping it kind of works.
How hard is it now? Because you're going to inherit a group of guys that are very, very good rugby players, but they've been playing for like 9 months. They're going to be shot to bit. You're going to be gluing some people back together come the start of this series.
Well, definitely by the end of the series. I mean, last year, the Kiwi series, it was man alive at the end of it, you know. So it's hard. It's hard work, but that's my job.
Yeah, as easy as that, eh? You enjoy it? I mean, obviously you enjoy it. You've set up your new business. It's
phil.uk.com. It's the idea behind the business is that, you know, we're all doing this stuff in the elite environment, but it's about bringing that to anyone, you know, someone from the street who wants to come in, who's got a bad shoulder, bad back, and wants to get that elite service. So you've got myself, Alan, physios, we got, you know, access to surgeons, all that kind of stuff. So it's bringing that elite model to the general public.
Very good. And it's a partnership, so you both obviously working in your own respective fields. So, Alan, you'll be involved as well?
That's right, yes. I'm involved from a health and well-being and performance perspective, very similar to the work I was doing at Bradford and the work I do with State of Mind. We have Marwan, of course, with his England IRL experience. We've got some great sonographers, so people that do ultrasounds of joints and assess musculoskeletal injuries, as well as a range of professionals and physios based here in Leeds, in the fair city of Leeds. And, it's really exciting work, a new venture for us.
So phil.uk.com. So yeah. If someone's got any... Because Scoey, do you do it with gout? Because Scoey comes in here moaning every week about his gout.
You saw his gout out.
Yeah, you saw it out for him.
Less red wine, I think.
My formula for my gout is 12 pints and a Chinese.
That'll be your problem.
Don't suit me working. I've been with that for 10 years and it doesn't suit me working, to be honest with you.
Let's make an appointment for him, Marwan. We'll see you next week.
There's your first client.
I'm at the rheumatology specialist. I'm not missing about over 3 months, so I'm at the rheumatology... Is it
rheumatology?
Rheumatology. Rheumatology. As I said, I'm from Bilal Boys, you know, so I'm there at on Thursday to get an update.
Good stuff.
Hopefully good news.
We're telling you to cut down on your booze.
Yeah. Oh, he's not listening now. He's stopped listening to you,
Marwan. I'm down on my sleep.
Right, let's have a look at what's going on the pitch this weekend. Obviously, we know the four. We knew them anyway. What we didn't know was who was going to be in that £1 million game. It is Hull KR against Salford, Phil.
Matt, by the way, ask the two lads, who do they support? Who's your teams?
The Bradford Bulls.
Not a lot to talk about there.
People used to boo, but now they're still sorry.
I'm a Wigan lad.
Wigan
looked after me when I was starting up on the ranks, and I started with Wigan.
Right, thanks for your time, Alan. see you, mate.
I'll tell you what, you'd be earning your money.
Wigan accent, that didn't work so long.
You'd be earning your money there now, wouldn't you? Because they have got some injury problems. But let's go back to the rugby, Phil. Hull KR. They've got principles because they won't pick Albert Kelly, but those principles might send them into the Championship. What do we make of it? Beaten by Huddersfield.
I mean, let's face it, if Campese's drop goal had landed, then that would have been 23-all at the end of the game. A draw would have been enough. I think the one saving grace for Hull KR at the moment is the spirit they showed to come back from 22-4 down. They were gone in that game. And to show the wherewithal and the desire to peg it to a point where it was in their hands... there's no point debating really whether the Donnybrough drop goal went over or not, because it's in the paper, so it must have done. But at the end of that game, you saw a long range effort from a guy who himself acknowledged that he hadn't played particularly well, and a try that was disallowed in the last minute that could have gone the other way. So I don't think they're a million miles away from getting it right. I think the Albert Kelly issue is something completely different, and it's something that we can't relate to, because it's about dressing room dynamics, and we don't know what goes on inside there. We're not privy to the fact that it may well be the other players in that dressing room that have decided that Albert Kelly won't help their cause. Might have all the talent in the world. He may even produce the play that perhaps saved them their jobs, but the fact is that on a day-to-day basis in that dressing room, they need to be a unit, and they may well feel that he isn't part of that unit. So I think Albert Kelly now is a red herring because it's gone on for 3 or 4 weeks. They're learning. They're going to have to learn to play without him. What they need, and he knows it and he said it, is they need Terry Campese to be the best he can be, and they can get away with Albert Kelly.
Hmm. What do you make of this score? I said at the time, I think whatever issue you've got with him, you deal with it behind closed doors. He goes out and plays. That's what he's paid to do. And he plays, keeps him up, and then you deal with him at the end of the season.
I agree. And I say I would have fined him. I fined him 2 weeks' wages, and they said kept it in house. So then get him to perform to the best of his ability. And then, because if he would have been playing, then there's no doubt about it for mine. They wouldn't be in a £1 million game. He would have gone where they want to be, and then deal with it from there. And it's a huge call, you know, certainly by keeping one of your best players at the club. And Phil's just saying now, but Kelly, you know, on a week-to-week basis, well, it's been the last 2 or 3 weeks now about the players. But Albert Kelly, he won't change his way, Phil. He would have been like this all season. He'd be like Sissokiano, because I know he's from Newcastle, and I think he's been sacked by two clubs, to be honest with you. So, but surely, Ulkis and Rovers have known what he's been like there. And we know he came late home from Australia, I don't know, is it 2 or 3 days or something. But for mine, you know, and I say they've got principles, they've got discipline, and I fully understand
but
that.
You will have played with guys you didn't get on with, sure.
Well, that's what sport's all about, isn't it? Yeah, totally. But if he's your best player, then I can remember Doug Lawton. Doug Lawton, I had an ear operation, and he didn't have a clue about anything, to be honest with you. But when I was sent by our club doctor, our club physiotherapy specialist, myself, to go see an ear specialist, Dr. Fraser, and in the end, it was a matter of I had a serious poison in my ear, and I had to have an operation at the end of the season. But just because he wasn't told about it, which wasn't my fault, it was either the physio or the doctor who didn't communicate with him, I got suspended for 2 weeks and fined £300, to be honest with you. But I guess that's another story from there. But yeah, the position what Ulkis and Rovers are, I reckon. Do you reckon there could be a chance of Albert Kelly playing this week?
None. I think there's a stick.
So you know, but you inside information.
No, not at all. I don't think they'll. I think if you've shown principle up to now, you're not going to back down. I think that would be an ultimate sign of weakness. I do think kids like Matty Marsh are growing up very quickly in that environment, but I would
go
with...
Phil, it's not all about environment.
No, but
I'd go with... It's all about survival, Phil.
I'd go with the kid who's from
the
city.
I like him. I like Matty Marsh.
Who's come through the
system.
I
like him.
Rather than the maverick who may or may not win you the game. I think Albert Kelly's days are gone at Hull KR. And they've got to stop talking about him. We've got to stop talking about him.
He can't. Well, you know some inside information.
Terry Campese is the man. If he is fit,
he's only played on one leg. He's not fit. He's only played on one leg.
But he showed in some of the other qualifiers that he can win games on his. How many times have you said he can play in
Denver suit? Oh yeah, he's.
All we need is.
I'm not denying it. He's a quality player on his day. He's the best number 6 in Super League.
They need a Denver suit performance from him.
He is a quality player there, but I just feel as though for that 80 minutes...
I think it's going to be more about what Sean Lunt does, what Mitch Allgood does, what Jamie Peacock might do coming off the bench, what Chris Clarkson does. It's going to be the unity of that team.
OK, I'll ask you a question. What's Peacock done since he's come off the bench then for Featherstone Rovers? Played against Featherstone. What has he done since he's come off the bench?
I suspect he's given them some leadership. And more.
Well, it seems to me he had a bit of a whinge on Twitter the week. He should be getting done for that, shouldn't he?
I'm sure he's caught up in the moment of the fact that his livelihood may well be at stake along with all the other players. The only stat I saw from the game on Saturday was that he came off the bench and by half time was their leading tackler. Now, again, that's not something that you're going to.
Well, given that they were 22-4 down at half time, Phil, they might not have done much tackling in the first half.
But I think he's there because he's a talisman type figure. He's a totem that you follow in times that you need him, and that's what he's bought. He's not bought.
Is he the Emperor's new clothes?
If they get relegated, possibly.
Because he's been brought in to oversee everything, and set out this word culture that we keep hearing about, which is great. We've seen Daryl Powell change the culture at Castleford, and look what's happened to them. But again, he's changing the culture, you know. We're hearing players they're going to be signing for next season. Are they good enough? Are they going to improve the team?
They're not going to be signing anybody until they know what division they're in. I think, again, your 5-year plan goes back at least a year if you get relegated. The fact that they've got Tim Sheens on board for next year, that's sort of moving the club forward a little bit, but you've got to be doing it in Super League.
Is Tim Sheens their first choice, do you feel? Why could he have not been appointed three games into the season? He would have left Salford, wouldn't he?
Well, I would have thought that he's an honourable man. He may well have signed a contract with Salford. It might not have been as easy at the beginning of the season, but I think what you allude to with that is the fact that that coaching situation may not have helped them this year. That void that there seems to have been might be why Peacock's now having to play. That the leadership on and off the field is going to be driven by him.
So should he have not made himself coach?
I don't think he is a coach. I don't think he pretends to be a coach. I think he's a player's player, and I think he's shown, unlike Albert Kelly perhaps, that he is prepared to get his hands dirty and get in there at the mucky end and do
it. How can you say that? How do you know Albert Kelly would have happily played the other way?
He didn't turn up. At this vital time of the season where you need everybody on board, he couldn't get back in time.
Scully, I'm not. I think he's the emperor's new clothes, mate. I think we've been good player. You see it at football all the time. Ellen Road, past players come back, managers don't work. Doesn't work. I'm not having him.
It'll be interesting.
Not as coach. He was a great player. I have to say that. Not as coach, not as leader.
Yeah, Matt, to be honest with you, I'm not the person to be talking about Jamie Peacock. I'll leave it on that, to be honest with you. Everybody knows, that the relationship, what we've got, is quite simple. He doesn't like me, I don't like
him. With hindsight now, obviously he criticised you for criticising players. Do you think now he's actually sat on the other side of the fence, he might go and think he's rubbish, he doesn't do what he's told, he doesn't listen, so do you think he might see that?
He can see that, you see, and that's the frustration what comes out of you. I know myself, the short time I as a coach, and he can see that now. It's quite simple.
And what's interesting with having Marwan here is he's going to be the England manager.
Yeah, but it's going to be
so
a different culture.
So you're going to have to work?
No, but Phil, that's a totally different context.
No, because you were saying about...
being a director of rugby and coming on as a player.
How do you decide whether a player is injured or not? Who do you refer the decisions to? One of the people in Wayne Bennett's close proximity is going to be the manager of the team. It may well be that you will be reporting to somebody like Jamie Peacock. And he's learning fast this side of the ropes.
Yeah, but we do often just come in and argue. It's like a bit, we class it as our therapy session. Yeah. We just come and shout at you.
You all do very well. Keep going.
And at the end, we want to strangle each other, so you'll be coming in between us.
What I want to do is hear anybody keep taking the tablets.
We're just charging £100 an hour.
That's all right. Keep going. No worries. Yeah. No, Scully's paying. We're all right. He's three games or four games in a series. Jamie Peacock, he's the man. I get that. I get what he brings, but over it's a different environment over a year.
It's down to 80 minutes. The whole picture changes.
He's had 30 weeks plus a cup game.
This is their grand final. Are they going to be in Super League next year? Can you do everything you want to do? Can you change the personnel in the dressing room, which changes the culture in the dressing room? Can you bring in a coach who has won everything in his career? Can you really do that in the Championship? Will Neil Hodgell still want to put the amount of money in that he's putting at Super League level if the team is playing in the Championship level? Everything is down to this 80 minutes.
I tell you what as well. Mr Sheens now, he's left Salford. When he announced he was going to Wilkie, was it 3 weeks ago? He should have just said, see you later. Goodbye, God bless. Now he's left. Do you think he might have just... I'll have a steady drive down the M62. I'll keep going up to the Clive Sullivan Way. Then I'll just keep going as I'm heading out to... heading. But then I'll just take a little left to the KC Lightstream Stadium and just give a bit of a dossier onto the Salford players to the Ulkiar. What do we make of that?
Well, Ian Watson was happy for him to stay. So he stayed, didn't he? It's not Tim Sheen's fault, is it?
Yeah, but do you reckon Tim Sheens?
Of course he will.
Yeah, well, exactly. So why did they keep him?
I think that's a very good question. As soon as he was appointed as Hull coach and they were in the qualifiers, and there was a possibility of this happening.
It was always going to be a possibility, Phil, wasn't it?
Yeah, recruitment was great. You helped us recruit some players. You've given Ian some advice, but now it's down to Ian. We can't afford to have you in the building because we may end up playing this team.
And it is. Do you think he'll be at the game on? Do you think he'll be at the game on Saturday?
Yeah, wearing a disguise.
He might be the video ref if Jamie Peacock's got up to do with it.
He'll be the Robin on the sideline. He's passing the messages back.
It'll be an interesting one, won't it? But I tell you what, I fancy Salford. I think Salford's going to survive. I do.
What about you, Phil?
I think Hull KR have got the spirit to see them through, and the crowd, I think, is going to be vital in this.
They had that crowd and spirit on Saturday, didn't win.
I think that experience on Saturday will stand them in really good stead. I'm not sure playing Batley is the same for Salford. They've almost, Hull KR have almost played this game last week and came within a coat of paint of surviving.
Hull KR did beat Salford, we were there, Scotty, weren't we?
But who was the man of the match? Who was the leader for Hulkies and Rovers? Who was the organiser? Who was the tactical kicker? Who was the creator? Matt Wilson?
Albert Kelly.
There we go. I tell you, I just wonder if Hulkies and Rovers, looking under wraps, you know, and maybe announce 48 hours, we'll have to announce the teams, bite the bottom lip, bite everything what they've got, and say, yeah, he's playing for us this week.
Do you think he'd be ready? In the right... I mean, probably a good
thing to ask the doctor. Do you think he'd be in a good psychological space? Would he want to play for Hull KR? I know Matt Wilson said to me, you think with Albert Kelly, you say no, wouldn't you? I would.
If you're asked, yeah, you've been... basically, he's been blamed for everything here, hasn't he?
I'd say no.
But if they wanted to pick him, will he psychologically be in a position to play?
Very difficult, isn't it? The pressures of the game. We talked about Tim Sheens, we talked about Albert Kelly, both in difficult positions out there and both under an awful lot of pressure. It's going to be an interesting weekend.
It's going to be an interesting... Well, I mean, I don't know. I like watching sport for things like this, and it seems really an horrible thing to say, but I want to see the reaction after the team that's won and the team that's lost.
This goes right back to ancient Rome. These are the gladiators in the arena, aren't they? One of them isn't coming out.
Yeah, that's quite a way to put it, isn't it? We have got live commentary, by the way, of Hull KR Rovers against Salford online on Saturday afternoon. We've also got full match commentary of Wigan against Hull FC in the semi-final from the DW on Friday. Will you be there cheering them on, Marwa? Are you going, hey, Marwa? Have you cheering white scarf and your rattle and whatever it is?
Fortunately, no, I can't make it. I'm preparing for England.
Very good. And what about you, Al? Are you going to watch Bradford against Sheffield?
Absolutely, at the Championship Shield, the top trophy that is. Looking forward to that.
How do you market that? I mean, the week before last, you beat a team 80-0, and then you've got to sell to the public the idea that you're playing them again for a trophy. It's a tough one. Tough sell.
Has it been tough to watch, Alan? The Bulls and their demise?
It has. I mean, a few years ago, well, it's probably 10 years ago now, people used to boo when I said I was a Bradford Bulls fan, and now it's just pity and...
He's a Bulls fan as well. Boo! I know, he can't say it anymore.
I've given up. It has been a fall from grace, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think... or just a whole range of things, but you'd have to say the financial management of the clubs had a knock-on effect on the running of the club and the and therefore at times on the playing side of the club.
Slippery slope.
Could you see them getting back?
I would love to. I'm a natural optimist, so I'd love to. There's a lot of great young players coming through. The academy's been very successful under Matt Diskin, so I feel optimistic for the future, but I still think there's perhaps a little bit of rebuilding to go.
Yeah. How long can they survive outside of the top flight, though?
If your crowds are going to three and a half thousand
in that stadium, can you wait for these kids to come through?
It's very difficult, isn't it? I suppose only Mark Green knows the finance of the club. The finance of the club have been complex at best. But I remain an optimist. I think Bradford have been through dark
days. They'll have a good crowd this year when Hulkies and Rovers come.
Oh, you rotter.
I'm a black and white.
Yeah. Well, you see, we were saying, weren't we, the other week about what a good week it could be for Hull, of it winning the cup and everything. Well, it could be a good week for Hull KR this week, because Hull could lose Friday and they could win Saturday, and I think they'd take that, wouldn't they?
Oh, well, I'll tell you what, you look at Friday night, Hull KR fans have been absolutely delighted that they didn't win the league leadership. Oh, yeah, this week, when you look at the Hull City, the black and white and the red and white from there, the red and whites will be cheering that Wigan absolutely batter them, and I think they will, to be honest with you. Wigan will batter Hull this Friday night, the way Hull are playing. And then the black and whites on Saturday, I'll be thinking, yes, get yourself relegated, we've not said before. It's fascinating, is it?
It is, indeed. Absolutely
fascinating.
And yet, in the back of their minds, the Hull fans will also want to keep that down.
Of course they will, and so will the Rugby League as well.
Mm. Oh,
so
the Super League is the poor if we don't have
I agree
admittedly
totally.
We don't want it 17 times a year, but we certainly need it.
I agree totally.
Luke has asked the gentleman in the studio tonight, you say that different clubs or coaches are more receptive to your advice than others. He's asked you to name names, but I don't think we should do that, but how how are you, do you, are you targeted to try and get more clubs on board what you guys are doing? Or, I mean, for instance, Marwan, do you have any dealings with the clubs now during the season? Obviously players that are going to come under your care in a couple of weeks' time. Are you actually in conjunction with the clubs now about their health?
They'll let us know in terms of, with the medical staff, the players, when we see them, you know, in the lead up to the games, and then we kind of take over the care, then when at the end of the series, then they're back to the clubs. I mean, we, as I say, our input is mainly the medics. I think it's they're the people on the ground at the clubs, so we do meet the various doctors and physios from all the clubs in the Super League and talk to them about these issues, and have the discussions there for them to then put out their own message. So it's difficult to do it, you know, to us to go around all the different clubs, but as I said before, each club works very differently, and a lot of it comes from the culture of the club. The manager makes a big difference, you know, to what you mentioned, kind of alpha male, alpha dog type approach, and not all managers are like that. You know, some of them are, some of them aren't, and you can probably guess which ones are and which ones aren't, to be fair. But the one, you know, if an aggressive environment is aggressive for everybody, including staff, so it just depends on the club.
Interesting indeed. Keep tweets, there are a lot of tweets coming in actually, at RL on RY. Mike says that Phil just called Scully an alcoholic. He said it's a bit harsh, I know. He's nicking your catchphrase now. I think it was said tongue in cheek, wasn't it, Phil?
I didn't hear him dispute it.
No, neither did I.
Training standards are getting involved.
And I think Marwan, who sat next to Gary, just met him, thinks, this guy, you must admit, he does like a beer. And then he's wondering why he's got gout. Never mind.
I'm an athlete. Don't worry about that, lad. I'm an athlete.
He's hiding that six pack, Will.
I like Marwan now.
What's up with that cigarette? What's up with that?
Oh, that's on the camera as well. Unbelievable.
What's up with that six pack?
Barry said, I'd love to see Josh Griffin or Michael Dobson get the winning try, but think Hull KR will win comfortably.
So would all the black and white fans at all.
Early Bird on Twitter. Now, I'm suspecting he might be a Hull fan. Says, if after 29.9 games of the season your safety is affected by a drop goal, then you have done something seriously wrong along the way. Let's start by being 20 points to nil up in the derby. I think he's let the blue touch paper. We'll hear more about that here on Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire with you through until 8. It's an action-packed show as always, but now we have got the news coming up with Derek Clark, who's just breaking the studio when he comes in. So he's an athlete. He's big, strong. He's an athlete. You're not an athlete, Scully.
And you're not as well, Mark. Well, like a
never claimed to be. Never claimed to be.
Also, but you claim to be a golfer. Have you seen him golf, guys? Yeah. Oh, please. Honestly.
Yeah, I think you'll find that my team last week won the Bradford City Golf Day Classic.
And I was on your team. I'd
have won it by more if you hadn't been there.
I was your captain, an inspirational leader.
There you go. If anyone needs a captain, in fact, why don't we get you signed up for Hull KR, then we won't have to...
Not a chance.
Very good. Proper sport at 6. Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire with Mark Wilson. Welcome back to Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire. Derek has just been in the studio. He's been doing some gymnastics following the success at the Olympics. He's been diving off the 10-metre board at the Leeds Olympic Baths. I'm just wondering what we should have Scully do. What do you think, Scully?
Belly flop.
What did he? I didn't catch that.
Belt belly flop. What do you mean?
Actually, if you look at TV Yorkshire, old Derek, he might be an athlete, but his diving is awful. He got out and he was bright red on his chest.
I told you when he was at Leeds, didn't I? You know, he'd just come in to go swimming, you know, to the rehabilitation. We got kicked out after 3 weeks because we were just dive bombing. We just didn't take it in it. Serious. We just thought, well, we can mess about and go to town or tavern. That was our recovery.
I think we should get him to do dressage. I'd like to see him on a dancing horse.
I'd like to see a horse.
I've danced with worse. I've got three worse I can reassure you.
Oh,
but anyway.
Dear. Oh, dearie me. Welcome along, Phil and Gary here, as always. So we're talking about the £1 million game. We have got a couple of special guests in the studio, Marwan and Alan, with us tonight from phil.uk.com. There you
Farmers go. Health Innovations Limited.
Very nice website, by the way. Yeah, I'm impressed with that, boys. Thank you. We've had a lot of talk in about Old Kingston Rovers. That has set the tongues wagging. But Daniel has always he's been on as well about player welfare, maybe not allowing teams to play with 14 and 12 minutes. It's a scandal. Need to reduce the number of games. Tyler says about the Peacock experiment. Has it worked? No, it hasn't. The plan was to include himself in order to win the last three games. That failed. Elsewhere, Daz says, no, they should stick by the decision. Wakefield did the same with Smith and Lott last year, but I'd argue that was a legal matter rather than an internal matter.
It didn't stop them playing. If they'd have wanted them to play, they made the moral decision that they weren't going to play with two of their best players.
But I guess when you've broken the law...
Hold on, Kevin Locke wasn't the best player. He was rubbish.
Potentially, he could have won them that £1 million game on his own.
Who could?
Kevin Locke.
Oh, do me a favour, Phil. He was rubbish.
Kevin, if you're listening. Chris says, play him or punish him, but the quicker the decision, a quicker decision would have been preferable.
Hey, Mark, let me just say, you know what, the OKR fans, if it was put to the OKR fans, Kelly to play or not, I bet you, 75-80% and say, we want him in our side.
Okay, we'll ask that question. Richard will send that out on Twitter. Con, regular listener, says the Peacock experiment hasn't worked and he shouldn't be calling fans morons either, which he did on Twitter. Mm-hmm. On Saturday evening, and Jack says, no, the players are bigger than the club. So, again, everyone's got a different opinion.
Absolutely.
On this, haven't they?
But we won't be able to really decide until we know the result of this game, which is why, whatever the rights and wrongs, the implications of promotion and relegation, this is what people are talking about. This is giving the sport the profile that we deserve.
Indeed. We asked the question, who do you think's going to win? 62% Hulk Air, 38% Salford. About you, Marwan, who do you think's going to win? Hull Care or Salford?
Hull. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think it's just better form. I think being a Manchester lad, I would want Salford to win. But I don't think they will.
You know, if we'd have vetted you properly and realised your Lancashire bias, we might not let you in. You do know that, don't you?
Undercover, that's it.
Undercover? No. Sean Wayne hasn't sent you, has he? Because he's fallen out with Scully, actually.
Yeah, that's the big story.
Yeah,
in the
yeah.
It's not York going with 12 players.
No.
Which
Sean's
is a scandal.
Out with Scully, hasn't he? Scully, you've been upsetting him now, haven't you?
Well, it seems to be, but I've not fallen out with him, so hopefully I'll send him the same text message on Friday to wish him all the best and play well and hope they win, so exactly like I do a few people, but I've not had a reply from him for the last couple of weeks, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I've known Sean Wayne since we were 12 years of age when we played against each other as kids at county level, you know, so won't be for sure. I'm not going to let a few words what I've said about... I'll tell you what, yeah, exactly, I'll tell you what. I said about Wigan, and let me just say about in the League Express today, and what a Wigan fan has said, and I'll defend myself here, and hopefully if Sean's listening, but also the person who a media person sent Sean the clip, I think it was last week, but anyway, there's a letter in here in the League Express from Peter Nevercourt, Pateley Bridge. Hope you're listening, Pete. And thank you very much anyway to League Especially. But anyway, no ball fest. I would like to ask Gary Skirwood if, having watched the Warrington and Wigan game last Friday, he still thinks that watching Wigan play is a ball fest, as he recently stated. What I did say was if Wigan and St. Helens make the grand final, it would be a ball fest. League Express should ask Donald Trump to write a column to replace Gallagher pulling no punches, as surely he knows more about rugby league than Mr. Schofield. That game was one of the highlights of the season, and with some fantastic skills and a whole lot of guts and determination on show, I rest my case. Well, I rest my case, Peter, never caught from Pateley Bridge. It was quite simple. For 18 minutes, Wigan was absolutely outstanding. Why did they score 4 brilliant tries? Why did Matty Smith kick a drop goal to win the game? It's quite simple. They moved the ball. Before that, they was absolutely clueless. It was plan A, plan A, plan A, plan A. Then they went to plan B, decided to move the ball 40, 50 metres out, asking loads of questions of Warrington defence, played some very, very quality rugby league and won the game. That's exactly what I said after the game against Warrington. And the ball fest comes quite simply. If it's Wigan and St. Helens in the grand final, it will be boring. Simple as that.
There you go, that's Gary. He's here every week. he has his say, lads. You've got to get used to it. Maybe we should send him for a siesta, Alan, because apparently sleeping is the way to win now, isn't it?
That's right. I thought it was worth covering that a little bit today. We've talked about mental health. We've talked about prescription medications. And something that we can all relate to is sleep. We've all had a bad night's sleep. There's nothing worse than things running through your mind as you're trying to sleep in the middle of the night. So we can all relate to sleep problems, and it's something that we've found across a range of sports, a range of athletes, that's important. Some elite clubs such as Real Madrid have sleep centres, so they have individually designed sleep rooms at their training ground. And on somewhat a lesser budget, something that we tried at Bradford, having a sleep room, helpful for players who might have trouble sleeping overnight, perhaps they have young kids. And there's lots of evidence about muscular dexterity and high levels of performance being related to high sleep. Athletes such as Roger Federer talk about their 10-hour sleep. And there's lots of studies showing improved physical and mental performance relating to sleep. So I think sleep's a big factor. It links to what we were talking about earlier in terms of medication use. A lot of players request Zopiclone, which is an addictive benzodiazepine medication. And they request that after the match for sleep. So I think there's a link there between performance and health and well-being, and that's something that we look at, Marwan and I, in our clinic. We look at sleep as part of the overall package of player well-being.
Because Steve McNamara was big on sleep. I know I interviewed him. It was going back a few years, but it was on about sleeping cycles and the importance of waking up at the right time and having the full cycle of sleep. I mean, we laugh at that, but these are the normal man would laugh at that. But
the 1%ers.
These are the 1%ers or the half a percenters that might make the difference between England winning and losing, aren't they?
Yeah, I think from an England point of view, a lot of it's when we're travelling. You know, there's a big issue in terms of adjusting and getting all that bit of it, which is really difficult. You know, when we go into Australia or those kind of places, it's hard to get adjusted and get the rapid turnaround that we need to do. But on a wider scale, sleep, is pretty black and white. You don't sleep well, you ain't going to perform. You know, and that goes for anyone in terms of whether you're at work or you're going to be, on the field. The issue that Alan's talking about in terms of players want sleepers, so give us a sleeper dog, which is standard type thing that exists in the sport, is that if you have something that artificially puts you to sleep, it completely disrupts that cycle that you have. So you might be actually physically asleep, but you've not gone through the whole winding down and slowly getting into your good quality sleep, which, as Alan's saying, loads of evidence to show that in that period, that's when if you've been to the gym, you need to sleep so you can regenerate that muscle and grow. You know, you need to mentally digest the day so you feel better. So it has an absolute direct link with performance, which is why, Steve Mack was key on it. And it gave us the freedom, really, to put strategies in place for the players so they could sleep well. And there's loads of issues when you're on tour. Classic one is, one of the players comes to the player.
Listen, Doc, whenever Stegall goes on tour, Stegall on tour, Doc. Hey, I tell you what, there wouldn't be plenty of sleep on tour, I can reassure you.
Snoring. Classic one, Bloody hell, Doc, he's snoring his head off. And then we would change the rooms for them. We'd give them their own room, If you go next to you snoring his head off and you can't sleep, that's a big deal, we laugh about it, but that does make a difference.
I've shared a room with Scott, he does snore. Yeah. Sadly, Radio Yorkshire budget wouldn't allow another room.
That's changing Magic Weekend arrangements
for next
year.
But when you talk about that, lads, because my pre-match routine was, I'd say Saturday afternoon, we'd train on Saturday morning, we'd have us breakfast, we'd have the full mashings, we'd go across the road, we'd have the cafe across the road, so we'd have the full mashings, breakfast in the afternoon, I'd just relax and what have you, and then, I'd have my tea, it'd be 5 o'clock, spaghetti bolognese, and then I would watch Brookside, remember the old Brookside? It was at the Omnibus edition, at 5 o'clock, well, 6:30, then I would go to bed every Friday night, but I would go in the spare room. I would say, see you to Adele and the kids, and then I would be in bed for 6:30. I wouldn't be asleep. I'd put the portable television on and have a bit of a read or something like that, and then watch the telly. Then I might fall asleep about 10:30, 11 o'clock, and then the next morning I'd be wide awake at 7:00, and then get the paper, and then, Adele will go get the paper, to be honest with you, and I'd get out of bed about 10 o'clock. But I felt that was quite enough for me, but I guess every individual's different.
That's
but what I did, I just got myself away from there, and at times, but to be honest with you, at times, it, you know, it frustrated my wife Adele and this sort of thing, because, you know, you go to bed early, but unfortunately, this is my job and this is what I have to do, you know, so, but again, but there's a bit of pressure putting on from your partner thinking, well, I've got two young kids here and they're running around and wherever, you know, but pretty tough that at times, isn't it?
What you just described, though, is a routine.
That's right.
That's what I'm saying, a routine, yeah.
That does, a lot of people, and it's not just in sport, this is in general, is a lot of us have a routine. You know, you mentioned, like, I'll watch Brookside at 6 PM.
Well, to be honest with you there, Doc, I in my life, I've never had a routine. Yeah. You know, my mind can change every 5 minutes.
You just described a very good routine.
That was on a Saturday night.
I think that's important.
That was a pre-game.
If I wasn't
doing that for rugby, nowhere near. I'd be doing totally different things.
But that's your pre-game routine. So you had a pre-game routine.
Players
will have a pre-game routine, but what most of us now in this day and age don't have routine. We have a lot of sporadic stuff. So you mentioned watching Brookside. Now, what you watch, watch something on the phone, watch something on catch up. There's loads, you know, on Xbox. So there's a lot of different ways now.
Do you watch Brookside? It was a good program.
Do you watch it? It was a good program.
You know, Sam is old enough now, to be honest.
It was a good program.
Isn't that the one with the sheep?
But also, as well, and the thing I'm saying is, like, but I didn't need any tablets to send me to sleep. You know, just naturally, we're just there, we'd then just nod off. So
an Xbox sets a Brookside for the England players to watch to send them to sleep.
There you go. What you described there is a great pre-match routine. You started planning for the match on Sunday.
Yeah, exactly.
Saturday morning.
Yeah.
You had almost 48 hours there.
Well, to be honest with you, from the game on the Sunday, I knew exactly what my routine was the following week. You know, nothing changed. It didn't matter if Adele was shouting and bawling at me. No, you're not doing it. That was me. Yeah. You know, so I knew what was happening.
So I think you had a great pre-match routine there, and you stuck to it each time, and you must have done that sort of
thing. Oh, by the way, I had beans on toast as well for my pre-match meal.
You can remember it. And I think sleep's not a 1%. Sleep is a 10%. The effects of sleep are massive, both on well-being and performance, and a part of perhaps the strategies to avoid the use of pills and medications is to give people alternatives, and routine is such a big part of that alternative. Yeah. Also, we need to make sure people's, you know, room is comfortable, it's at the right temperature, the duvet, the pillow. The details that these sleep scientists go into, say at Real Madrid, is to individualise each person's pillow and duvet and blanket and room and temperature. But getting into routine, as Scurry just described, is ideal. I think you had a great routine there.
What would you say in terms of the percentage then of people? Two questions. What percentage of rugby league players do you think are taking some form of prescription drugs? And are they more for pain or more for sleeping, in your opinion? And we appreciate it might be a guess.
Yeah, so in my experience, if we're talking about these addicted prescription drugs, so we're talking about opiate, analgesics, things like tramadol, or we're talking about sleeping tablets, in my experience, you would have between a third and a half that would never use them, would be, as you described, I don't touch pills, I don't use them. You'd have around a third that would use them now and again, and you'd have between 20% and 30% who are using them regularly.
Wow.
And of those, there are some people who we definitely need to, of that 30%, there's some people who we definitely need to divert to other strategies, such as we just talked about, it's called sleep hygiene, making sure all the components of your sleep and your routine are effective. So there's an awful lot of people it doesn't affect, but for those it does, these medications can be addictive and can be damaging.
We've all got different biorhythms, I'm led to believe. So how would you program a team if you're talking about sleep patterns or when brains are active in some people? You know, some people are morning people, others are night people. How do you regulate that? That must be a nightmare.
There's an organisation called Sleepio who've done a lot of work on sleep, and they have an app and a website, and we've used that a lot in my experience. And one of the things that they talked about is that we all have a natural rhythm, and some of us are morning people, you know, other people are night owls, and the training that you do, the performance is affected by what type of sleeper you are, what type of waker you are. So if you're naturally a night owl and you're up at 7 and to start training at 8, then you're not going to perform as well as someone else. So that's in theory, but reality is going to your club and saying, excuse me, you know, these two players need to have like an afternoon training session and these ones need to have you're not going to last a second, are you? So, you know, that it does exist. I think the bigger issue is the caffeine and the supplements that these guys are getting. You know, as I say, as a medical team, we would give them, because certain amounts of caffeine do improve performance. You know, a certain dosage will improve performance. over that dosage, you're going to get side effects, and lack of sleep's one of them. And the problem is, a lot of the games are late kickoffs, so they're wired up before the game, they finish in 9-10 p.m. by the time they get home, might be even later, 11-12, and then their sleep hygiene is not good, so they might be on their Xbox. So they're wired, they're on their Xbox, they're on the phone, there are all these what we call blue lights, which any artificial light, so a computer screen or your phone, has a particular type of light called blue light. The sun is not blue light, and blue light's particularly bad at your body's. When you get exposed to blue light, it particularly affects your sleep and it makes you struggle to get to sleep. So you don't have to kind of go to bed straight away. It's a winding down process, and keeping away from those kind of things. So it's not, as Alan said, it's not just, there's not one thing. You know, it's part of the bigger problem in terms of using, you know, just asking for a prescription medication is just the kind of the tip of the iceberg in terms of the problems.
Mm. How concerned are you, Alan, about medication in sport? As in, we'll say it's not needed, but people taking it for the sake of taking it.
I think I'd say alongside a whole range of different addictions. We haven't covered gambling yet, because gambling is felt to have no side effects. It's not a pill that you take, but gambling has devastating effects on people. It's something that can be addictive. It's something that can accumulate. So I'd say in that same ballpark, alcohol, gambling, medications. I'm concerned. Yeah, I'm concerned. I think that the key is to individualise the treatments, the assessments, as much as we can. As you said, we can't have different people training at different times, but you can individualise aspects of their treatment. I think having a good working relationship with the players is essential. So at Bradford, Francis Cummings had a great relationship with the players. In my opinion, they felt able to trust him, and I felt he was very forward-looking, and we had a great setup for player welfare in terms of sports psychiatry. So I think for clubs, it would be essential to have a great working relationship with the club doctor, and with the players and the coach, to have a coach that's minded to think about player welfare, to treat players as people, as well as athletes. In my view, I think eventually we're going to get to the stage whereby there's a psychiatrist or psychologist in rugby clubs. So in the NFL in America now, 75% of clubs have a psychiatrist or psychologist in the team, in the same way that I was at Bradford, and we're a little bit behind that, but I hope it will come eventually, because I think what you need is some form of support for players, their welfare, their sleep, their mental health. And for the time being, you've got bits of support from sports chaplains, some physios, some club doctors, some managers, but it's not coordinated in the same way, so I think we've some way to go.
I think it's, you know, being a frontline doctor for the past like 10 years with clubs, a lot of the club doctors though are doing a really good job, and I think in general rugby league has come a long way the way it's been. You know, I think when I first started, you kind of felt like you're in this big hole of people wanting medications, and you know, as I say, you end up being the bad guy if you stop them from having it. The fact that we've, you know, able to have these discussions with coaches, and we're talking right now about it, and there's even a door for a sports psychiatrist to get involved in sports, is shown that the sport is open to it and that the clubs are taking it on board. And I think that the atmosphere has changed, and having those kind of medications is slowly becoming more taboo in professional sport. So I don't think, you know, I don't think it is all doom and gloom. I think we're actually moving forward really well. I think it's got way to go, but we're already making a lot of progress.
There's a great question for Scoa here. That when you were at Huddersfield in 96, you wouldn't have gone anywhere near sports psychology. In fact, you said on this programme a number of times it wasn't something that you wanted in the dressing room. Having heard what these guys have said 20 years on, if you were coach of Huddersfield today, would you consider it?
No.
But no. Why not, though? Why not? Times have changed.
I'm talking as myself, as an individual here, and I know everybody's different, but when you're talking about sports psychologists, most of them, I would say 85, maybe 90, what have they ever done in sport?
That's not the point.
This is me speaking here as a sportsman, you know. An example here, sports, let's just say, we're talking about from my day, and a sports psychologist is trying to tell me how to mark my Moringa, how to tackle that. Hold on. This is psychology, and if I'm honest with you, I'll be open and blunt about it. I just think if you need a psychologist, if you need somebody to tell you that how to play the game, what you trained so hard for, what you work for, I find it a weakness.
I think you're looking at
I find it a weakness. I do, honestly.
I'm picking, Alan. Your patients are not coming for tips on how to mark Gary Schofield or how do they kick the ball in the corner. They're more worried about more mundane things that are everyday things that we all worry about.
I've never told anybody how to mark Mel Meninga or Mel Meninga. I wouldn't know where to start. Now, I think a sports psychiatrist or sports psychologist would cover both well-being and performance. So, yes, some people come to talk to me about their kicking, about their passing. Now, they're not coming for my advice on how to kick and pass because my rugby experience is limited, as you said. But a sports psychiatrist or psychologist can help people to help themselves, can help give them structures, we call them cognitive structures, ways of thinking, visualization, ways of rehearsing or practicing that a player can add to their game, can add to their toolbox. So a sports psychiatrist is not there to replace the player's knowledge, certainly not there to replace the coach, but from a performance aspect is there to add in additional bits of advice. It's sort of
but okay, but then all right, I'll go a little bit further then. That's a matter of handling pressure. You ever can handle pressure or you can't handle pressure.
So we disagree there as well.
I think you've been a bit naive here.
As I keep saying, listen, I'm only a lad from Belisle, you know. Mr. Jepson taught me, as I said last week and whatever, he never taught me because he was an intelligent man and he taught French. And to be taught French, you had to be the top two classes. And as I said last week, I was in the plasticine class. But I'm just saying me, as an ex-professional sportsman, right, and not a bad rugby league player, to be honest with you, you know, I just find it, because my best advice I got was an 8-year-old from my father, right? My advice, what my father said to me, it was quite simple, and it stuck with me to this day, was simple. Don't you worry about them, let them worry about you. And that's exactly what my psychology is. You know.
Sounds like good advice. I guess not everybody had your father. In fact, not many people had your father as a dad, just yourself.
Well, two brothers as well.
There you go.
I think.
So we all have a different backgrounds, don't we?
Yeah, exactly.
Your background was more supportive, more encouraging than others. I see an awful lot of players who don't know their father, and so they didn't have perhaps your advantages. I think there's a performance aspect to it that you can help with. There's a well-being aspect to it, so helping people with their mood, their sleep, their anxiety. I sort of agree and I disagree with what you said a moment ago. You said that some people can handle pressure and some people can't.
Yeah.
So everyone's resilience, everyone's mental strength is a component of their genetics and their environment, their upbringing. But you can supplement that. You can help people who perhaps haven't had your advantages.
Well, okay, then. Another question here, because...
Keep them going.
Because when I got to where I wanted to get, you know, captain my country, you know, and this sort of thing, so, and also to captain Leeds, because I can reassure you here, when Leeds won, everything was great, all the players, we all took the applause, but when Leeds got beat, there was only one player who got the blame, and Phil will tell you, it was me, because I was a captain, I was the main player, there's only one person who got the blame. But also as well, what I'm finding today, not just in the league, but all sportsmen, they can't handle criticism. One thing for sure, they love all the octopus slapping, well done, great. But when they get criticised, the sulk, they like big babies. What do many players come in? Do they talk about? I'm not just talking about here the success. I won't talk about that because they love that.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, I bet they come to you and say, I don't like being criticised, don't they?
So, yeah, you're right. The hardest thing is to turn around a period of poor performance whilst things are going well, everyone's happy. But I've worked at Bradford, so I know about trying to turn around performances.
But just before you go, this is what I'm saying. Yeah. I love that pressure.
Yeah.
I love that. I absolutely love that added pressure. And when I got criticised, because what I did, one of the philosophies of the game was I didn't need a coach or a video or a remit with anybody to tell me how well I played. I looked at myself in the mirror, it was either 7, 8, 9, never a 10, because nobody was perfect. But I knew myself if I played good, bad or indifferent.
But you're talking, can I just come in? I think you're talking about two different issues with sports psychology, psychiatry. The first one is mental health. So players who are depressed, who are having anxiety issues, who've got addictions, who are in a really bad place. And that's the first one. The second one is performance. A lot of what you're talking about is performance. So how could you have got a better performance? Those one percenters. A lot of Alan's work is actually dealing with players who haven't got anyone to speak to, who are depressed. A player who I've dealt with, who's approaching retirement, and is thinking, I haven't got enough money to feed my family. What am I going to do thinking about ending their life. You know, there's a risk of alienating those people. So the mental health issue, I think, is absolutely key, that there's access to that, because a lot of players will go under the radar, and there's lots of high-profile cases of players who've taken the step too far. With the other issue, the performance issue, I can understand what you're saying, that there's this thing of, are we cuddling too much? You know, all this sports medicine, sports science, sports psychology, sport nutrition, all that stuff. And it's up in the air whether it's better or not. You know, this is my field, and I have lots of, you know, there's some people who feel that, you know what, all these new technology advances and everything is a lot of rubbish. And I think that's where you're coming from, which I can understand, but probably the example to give you of a group, a sport, which has taken all this to the nth degree would be cycling. Cycling have taken all this stuff and taken it, all the 0.1%ers, never mind 1%ers, they've got their own sports psychiatrist, who Alan knows well, and just look at what they're doing in the Olympics.
Yeah, but cyclists, but at the end of the day, cyclists, they're not getting smashed around the head, they're not getting smashed around the body, they're not getting smashed around the ribs, and they're not being put under pressure by being smashed, are they? No, to be honest with you.
It's different sport.
It's totally different sport.
I'm still thinking, Scotty, travelling 200 kilometres a day up a mountain is quite...
Oh, yeah, I understand that. I fully understand that, but as I say, at the end of the day, you know, you can have under pressure or you can't. It's as simple as that.
But then some people can be trained to handle pressure. Mm. Some people naturally can, some people naturally can't, but the ones that can't can be trained to handle pressure. Yeah. But you're right in that the pressure now, though, is phenomenal in terms of from social media point of view. There's a lot of pressure, there's a lot of money, you know, and I think a lot of these people, because there's so much pressure, end up becoming addicts at something. I think the natural personality type is getting something.
I think there's another big issue, and it was highlighted to me by spending some time with Tony Curry last week about the issue that they've got in Australia at the moment, where 25% of the players are coming from the Pacific Islands, and they're being plucked from an environment and put in a big city, and almost left to succeed at rugby or not, and there's no support network for them, and the incidence of suicide among either late teenage or early 20 players who have aspiration and who are brought there for a specific reason but perhaps can't handle it for reasons that aren't whether they're talented enough, and we don't do enough in the sport, and that's one of the things that is really worrying people in Australia at the moment. How do we stop that, and is that again something that's part of this trying to aid people to be comfortable in the environment?
Well, okay, let me just touch on another... Let me just go on about here then, right? Like, in my day and whatever, and going back a lot of years, you know, you talk about the money in sport, and certainly we talk about money, what rugby league players get paid now, and there's average rugby league players today, right, being paid £60,000, £70,000, £80,000 a season. And I can reassure you they're average. In our day, they wouldn't have made the A team. I can reassure you. You know, and what times, you know, the career what they're going to get having that sort of money over a 10, 11, 12-year period, what have they got to worry about? What do they have to worry about?
An awful lot of things, Scotty. I think it doesn't stop you having depression. Money doesn't stop you having
anxiety. No, no one said it does.
Well, then they have a lot of other things to worry about. It doesn't stop you being divorced. It doesn't stop you using drugs or alcohol. I don't think money is the answer to all these things, or else you'd be very happy. Mm. To come back to the question about the Pacific Island players in the NRL, there's something in there, I think, and it's about people staying in touch with their roots, staying in touch with their communities, staying in touch with their culture, the food, the music, the everything about them, and staying true to yourself. And perhaps, Scotty, you've managed to do that, you know, staying closer to home here in Yorkshire. There's something called the snowboard theory of mental health problems. There are relatively low levels of mental health problems among snowboarders compared to, say, Premiership footballers. And the theory is that the snowboarders continue to stay in touch with things outside of their sport. They're not just on this conveyor belt of a production conveyor belt of playing football and doing little else. They stay in touch with their friends, their family, their music, their fashion, their culture, and they kind of keep it real, if you like. They stay in touch with other aspects of their life. They have multi-dimensional lives, not just sport. And in doing so, they remain well. And I see that in players. I saw players at Bradford who had a wide range of other interests, other businesses, courses they were doing, educational courses, activities they had outside of the game, friends, family, and it helped them to remain well. So I think that people and perhaps Scrooge is an example of that, people who are able to keep in touch with their roots did better than people who were dislocated.
Mm. I think Scully forgets, actually, he was actually probably one of the best players in the world. He didn't have any problems about running contracts out and being relegated and stuff like
hold
that.
Hold on, Gary, wait.
Can I just say, because you picked up, you said a point about if they're on, let's say, 60k a year, what have you got to worry about? So, your average player, let's say I get 60k a year, what's the average length of a player's career? 10 years?
Mm.
If they're doing well.
If they're lucky.
Yeah? So let's just put 10 years. Mm. So over their life, they're getting 600 grand.
Mm.
Yeah? Let's just say your average person works out, let's say, gets 20k a year. Yeah? For 45 years. They're on 900k for their life. And the difference is, so they're there 300 grand less over their lifetime. The problem is that rugby player or any professional player stops playing, that's all they can do. And they've got nothing else to do after that. So the other thing is as well is that they get the money young and spend it, whereas someone who's earning 20k a year, it's a slow, gradual. They get family, they get kids, so they spread it out over their life. Someone gets 600 grand in 10 years, blows most of it, ends up finishing. That's why a lot of people, players, finish, and they're in loads of debt. You know, the biggest debts are the people who are professional players. So they're a year before retiring, they're in debt, perhaps. What else, what other skill have they got to do? And that's where some clubs I've worked at, they have apprenticeship schemes, like plumbing apprenticeships. So the club will fund an apprenticeship scheme. So when they finish, they've got something they can do. They learn in the past, you know, last couple of years.
But it doesn't give them the high and the buzz that they get from being involved in a dressing room and a team sport.
Absolutely. But you can see how that's why they're susceptible to all these worries. You said, what they've got to worry about? That's what they've got to worry about.
Mm. I think you're right. I agree. Let's move on then. Let's talk about the rugby score. Who's going to? You're telling me the black and whites are going to get hammered at the weekend. I think you're daft.
That won't be the first time you said that, Mark Wilson, I guess. But yeah, I think the black and whites, yeah, they're going to get battered. You know, and what I've seen. You know, I'm not going on about women anymore because the honeymoon's over with, but certainly that performance the week before, you look at Wakefield and then whether they got stage fright, whether the game was too big for them at the at home, you know, the big crowd, and they just, you know, the occasion got too big for them. Take nothing away from Warrington. Warrington was absolutely outstanding the way they played, but I just feel as though with the whole forwards, there's no purpose there whatsoever, there's no enthusiasm. That bite has gone, what we've seen all season, and creativity. Well, I'll tell you what, a few Hull fans said to me as they were leaving about 10 minutes before the game ended, and Craig Murdoch says, it's a nice compliment, Scoey. And they were saying, Scoey, can you put your boots on? Well, I'll tell you what, just let me say this. I didn't have my boots on Friday night. I had my flip-flops on like I've got here now. I'll tell you what, I could have played better than 2 halfbacks in my flip-flops.
The problem I felt the other night, and I don't know if you've seen the game, all of us, but Ellis, poor.
All the big game players.
But I think we've got the right people in the studio to ask about this, because I don't think it's a physical thing. If you've climbed Everest 3 or 4 weeks ago, and you come down, you've had this emotional high, you've delivered for a whole, half a city, and somebody says to you, will you put your boots back on and go and reclimb Everest? It's a psychological thing. That's the barrier to get over. Not that they've suddenly can't play and the structures have broken down. Surely the role of a sports psychologist is exactly what Hull need at the moment, to build them back up again.
That's interesting. It will affect different people in different ways, in the sense, Scoey, you've talked about that today and the way you feel it would affect you. So it would affect different people in different ways. Looking at a club from the outside, it's easy to put it down to one thing, isn't it? And often there's much more going on behind the scenes. So I don't think it's one thing, but I do think coming down from that emotional high is a factor and is something that you can input into and talk to the players about.
Can they bounce back this week?
Yes, I still think they've got 80 minutes in them. I'm not actually sure that the games between the cup finishing and where we are now were as important as the 80 minutes that they're going to play. Yes, it would have been lovely to win the treble.
But they were in the four anyway, regardless.
They were in the four, exactly. And I think that, again, what they've tried to do is manage this down that you always get when you've achieved something. And they've kept the squad together. They haven't got injuries. They've got the best players out there on Friday night. They're playing against a team that have a couple of players that we know are going to be missing, that we're going to have admitted today that Sam Tompkins isn't going to play all for the remainder of the season. And Sean O'Loughlin probably isn't either.
Well, Sean Wayne said today he's out for the season.
So that's something then that Wigan have got to manage on a playing front. Hull have got all the ingredients to put one final 80 minutes in. And in some respects, not picking up the league leader's shield takes the entire pressure off them. Mm. That the expectation now that, you know, they can go through the season and win everything. It's not there anymore, so you may as well just go out and leave everything you've got on the field. If they do that, that's why they had six players in the dream team today.
I tell you what, Adam Pearce would be thinking, oh, right, that's a great figure, isn't it? Yeah, we've lost a home tie, we've lost about 200 grand. Great, isn't it?
But that doesn't matter.
You won't be bothered if they win the grand final, will they?
But that might
be... They're not going to get there.
But that might be the price that you have to pay for winning the Challenge Cup. And you might have made a lot more than 200 grand on winning the Challenge Cup. Perhaps you can't have both when these two events are so close to each other.
He was as well asked at the start of the year, which one would you rather? And he said the Cup, didn't he? So I'm sure that...
Yeah, that's to get the King Kong off the back, that's why.
I think the shame for Hull is that if they don't make the grand final... then it won't tarnish anything that they've achieved this season. But the season used to end with the Challenge Cup final, and then you either had the Premiership or the Championship final, and it was rare that teams did the double. So the fact is that Hull would have revelled in winning at Wembley, and virtually their season would have been over, because they would have known that they probably weren't...
Well, did you listen to Charlie Smith's interview on Friday night? You know, it's quite simple here. He said, well, you know, yeah, the league leadership, but it's not the most important one, is it? And we all know that, you know, so...
But as a group, when you've won the Challenge Cup final, you're the only team that then can pick up the treble. That becomes a target for you. Once that's taken away, they can revert back, I think, to being the hole that they were. I certainly wouldn't rule them out over 80 minutes at Wigan.
No, I
wouldn't. And you've got the crowd factor to take into account. The Wigan fans are absolutely desperate. In fact, we have one. Absolutely desperate for success. Because if they don't win something this year, it'll be 3 years that they haven't won something. Success at Wigan is measured by silverware. If we get 50, 60, 65 minutes into a game on Friday night and Hull are winning, that Wigan crowd can become an adverse factor, I think, because of the way of expectation.
I tell you what, though, Phil, excuse me, where are Hull going to win this game, then? Where they have been playing, where are Hull going to beat Wigan on Friday?
They've got strike in the three quarters, they can score points, and they're packed.
Sorry, how is strike in the three quarters when the halfbacks can't pass the ball properly?
But the halfbacks won on the Challenge Cup. They can win over 80 minutes. Mm.
Do Wigan have Ben Flower?
He's banned. If he's back, he's back for the grand final.
Yeah, he is. What do you think, Marlon, our resident Wigan fan?
Lockers and Sam Tompkins are out as well, I think.
Yeah, they are.
It could go either way, I think. Depends how the kick-off is and how they get on. I think if Wigan get on top early, then I reckon they might dominate them. But I think it just depends, as you say, the crowd can turn. Flip a coin.
It's a tight one. What about the other one then? Warrington against St Helens. Again, can Warrington go to the well one more time?
Well,
Did that performance on Friday?
First of all, St Helens, under the radar, aren't they? 12 out of 13, under the radar.
We're not talking about.
Exactly. And also, as well, you know, the way they're playing, Saints fans are still going mad about it, but Kieran and the players, they're all nice and happy. They're in that dress. They could care less what Mark Wilson, Phil Capic, Guy Scover, anybody says. Ray French yesterday, I was speaking to Ray yesterday, and, you know, he's saying it's the worst sales performances for many, many years, but Kieran couldn't care less. The players couldn't care less. They're going nicely from there. They like going to the Halliwell Jones, don't they? And so they'll be going there to making sure that they won't be intimidated. But I just feel as though Warrington, the way they are, the class what they've got. If Gidley comes back, Sandow, I wouldn't play Sandow, to be honest with you. I'd stick with Declan Patton at 7 and put Gidley at 6. I just feel as though they'll have a little bit too much quality, Warrington.
What's interesting is Saints have got an added motivation again because we've had the Dream Team announcement today, no St Helens players in it. How many times have we seen...
Phil, have any of them deserved to be in the Dream Team?
Yeah, I had three in mine.
All right.
Who were they? Tell us.
Mark Percival.
He's been out for three months.
Probably not, actually. That would have counted.
Yeah, so he's out then.
But,
he's been out for 3 months.
I do think that he has certainly, when he's played, merits a place.
Oh, yeah, he should be an England centre.
Kyle Edmore I had at prop, who set their Saints player of the year.
He's been coming off the bench too much. I think the point is,
in a 17, you've got four props. So I think if you'd had four, it would have been in. Yeah. But you've got two, and I think there's a
great case for Scott Taylor. But I'm just saying, Kyle Amore has had a fabulous season, and the loose forwards really interesting because we don't have specialist loose forwards anymore. We've got more props playing at loose forward than we ever.
Don't tell me Louis McCarthy Scarbrook is a specialist loose forwards.
He was in there.
Move on. Move on, he's not a specialist loose forward.
I can't agree with that one.
He's not a specialist loose forward.
The fact is, St Helens can sit there at training tomorrow and say, not only is nobody talking about us, nobody rates us, not one of our players got in the Dream Team. You can use
that. So do you think that's going to be a motivation for this weekend's game, do you?
Yeah, I think Leeds have used that in the past.
Have they?
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Mm. Interesting.
I like Percival. What do you do with one?
I like Percival.
Do you bring back your two-star halfbacks for this game?
It's got to
think you've got to. Yeah. I don't think there's any question that you play Chris Sandow if he's fit.
Actually, I want to go back to that because we had a chat about this earlier. You, the man who says vision and guile.
Vision and awareness. Yes, absolutely. I do indeed.
But leave out Chris Sandow.
Because Declan Patton, he will take the pressure off what Gilly's going to get up under by St. Helens. Sandow doesn't do that. He plays like a maverick. He's like an individual. They will be far better if Albert Kelly, realistically, Phil, you didn't see the game against Salford. He did everything from there. Gidley does everything, but when he wants a bit of pressure taken off him, Sandow doesn't do that. He goes missing. Declan Patton, I know what I'm talking about because he used to play at standoff. I'm going to bat half back myself, Mr. Wilson, Mr. Kaplan, by the way. So, Declan Patton will take that extra pressure off Matt Gidley.
Okay. Who's going to win then?
Warrington, too much skill for me.
Yeah, I think Warrington have again. The mountain that Hull climbed to win at Wembley is the one that Warrington are on at the moment. Winning that league leader shield, I think, is going to give him the kick to get to the grand final and possibly win it.
Interesting. What about you, boys? Any opinion on this one?
Definitely Warrington. I've got a bit of a bias for Tony Smith, though. He's a big fan of sports.
Yeah, treats
the players as people. So I'd want Warrington to win anyway, but I think Warrington, yeah. Okay. Too strong.
Marlon?
He won't want St. Helens, will he? Wigan fan.
Tend to agree with Alan.
Oh, here we go. Yeah. Well, I'm going St. Helens. I think Saints will win. Yeah, I do. Been written off.
You're bonkers, man.
12 wins in 13. Beat Warrington in the eights.
Yeah. And had more rest than Warrington.
Great record at the Halliwell Jones.
No, you wouldn't rule them out.
Kieran Cunningham, they were going to pull the statue down. They'll be building another one soon.
I said that myself if he gets to the gunfire and wins it, but... should I really say this? What I am going to do if it's Wigan St. Helens final. We'll have plenty of sleep then, Doc. We'll have plenty of sleep then. We'll have a sleep fest from 6 o'clock till what time does it get finished?
Well, these are about 10:30.
Yeah. That's another issue.
We'll have a sleep fest on the 8th of October with the grand final.
Yeah, we'll do indeed. So when do you get your hands? Because obviously the squad England announced on Sunday? Sunday. Is that right?
I think so.
And that's when you get to know who you're going to be working with, or if you've got a little bit of insight and you could say, oh, he's going to...
They've got France first. Play France, don't you, first?
Yeah, we're playing France, yeah.
You've got France first, haven't you?
We kind of get involved end of October. Obviously, before then, we'll get to know, who's in. A lot of these players we've got to know already. I'm sure they'll be familiar faces. But we'll get the update on, from their teams, how they're getting on, if they're carrying any injuries. If anyone's got a significant injury, wouldn't be... usually works, but they have happened in the past. Had players on there who've been injured, so we'll get the players and then we'll do our best.
The last World Cup, 2013, you were probably working with Steve McNamara. There were some issues in camp with guys who broke curfews and people who had to be sent home. Is that something again that sports psychology that you can? You need to monitor this kind of thing. You need to deal with this kind of thing. You need to impose things.
I don't know. I probably sit on Gary's fence for that one. I think we're not their dads. You've got to kind of give them a bit of
absolutely, Phil. Come on. I think a bit of rubbish food.
Yeah,
Phil. Come on.
But the coach doesn't want them to do that. No, they break those curfews.
I think it's the coach's responsibility.
Yeah.
I don't think we should.
Well, what he's got to do there, Doc, is he's got to put the trust in the players, hasn't he? If he says, go and have a few beers, don't be getting 12, 18 pints down your head, 4 or 5 beers and a bite to eat. He's got to put the trust in the players, hasn't he? Treat them like men.
But you know some players are going to adhere to that. You also know when you pick your squad that you have some personalities in there that possibly won't. Can you work with those personalities?
That's one of the things that as a team, as a staff team, that we try to work in terms of setting cultures, standards of behaviour, just a general ethos to how we go about doing things. So, one of the things we had was honest, relentless and united. That was our motto for the England team with Steve Mack, and that was plastered everywhere. Any hotel we were at, training room, dressing room, it was always there, and we'd always talk about those values. So... if someone's going to go and do something, are they being honest with the team? So it's about setting out a culture, and then, if they don't stick to it, then that's up to the gaffer in terms of what he wants to do. But as doctors and things, no, it's not. I don't want to be getting involved telling people, go to sleep, or don't go out. One of the things that Steve Mack did, which worked well, was we did a lot of social things together. You know, I think there was some criticism of that when we were abroad about spending a lot of time actually socialising together, you know, and we got criticised as a team. We didn't train as hard as we could have done. I think that was the kind of general feel. But from my point of view, lads loved it, you know, because we actually were a proper team, you know, so that social integration, because these guys, you know, are going to be, you know, they're loggerheads the whole season. You have to get together and get on the pitch. Mm. So having that social cohesion is massive. So, you know, as I say, moving forward, we'll see how it works and how it plays out with all the changes.
It's like us in 1984, we went on tour, we had mottos all over the place, it called, "We are the Jolly Boys." That's what it was, the Jolly Boys. But we didn't do bad in the Test Series, to be honest, we enjoyed ourselves.
You'd have never thought, would you? You'd never have thought. I think
I loved it. I was only 18 years of age, and the first tour I got picked on in 84. And
scored the try of the century.
Yes, thank you very much, Phil. You're the best try I've ever scored. And our coach was Frank Myler, and Frank really said he didn't give us any curfews, and we didn't have team meetings. And Dick Gemmell was a team manager, and he couldn't care less, to be honest with you. So we was all on a bed and breakfast basis. Believe it or not, it was a Great Britain side. So bed and breakfast, obviously we had breakfast, then we didn't have no tea. So come 5 o'clock, after we'd finished the train at 3 o'clock, come 5 o'clock, we'd be getting changed and putting his deodorants on and spray. And up the road with the New South Wales Leeds Club. And for $5, they put on a starter and a steak salad. So we absolutely loved it. You know, good food for us, and it was athletes back in 1984. But then there was no curfew, so we just got on the lash. Mm. We'll get back in the hotel about 2 or 3 o'clock. We trained again at 7:30 and 10:30, and we did that. It was a great Jolly Boys.
Would you change that before the match? The night before the match, would you get back into
your brookside? We didn't drink before the game. No, right. Oh no, we didn't drink 40 hours before a game. But apart from that, because we were bored. To be honest, we had no to do and all. Yeah. There were no, like say, team meetings. They're bored anyway. Team meetings, to be honest with you. But there were no, like, you know, going, what did they do, go karting or paintballing or temping balling or going to the pitches. No, it would just get the aftershave on, you know, get the old links on you and get on the last. To be honest with you.
What you're talking about is playing culture. I'd agree with what Mark Wan said earlier in terms of, I think this is about the gaffer's rules, if you like, the team manager's rules, the coach's rules.
Yeah, but you've got to put the trust culture in the players, isn't it?
Exactly.
Really?
And what you're saying is you repeated that. Yeah. You might have a drink away from the Test Series, but when it came to a match, you'd change that routine.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. We didn't drink 40 hours before the game, we had plans.
But no one told you to do that, it was just...
Wondered if you knew that if there were vulnerable personalities in the group, that you could identify that in advance and circumvent some of the issues may have.
Yes, I mean, you do know, and you'll get a handover from the club's medical team, and they'll let you know if there's an issue. But I think the point that you're saying, Gary, is that the reason why all these guys came into it, and gals, is because they love rugby and they play. So I think that element's got to stay there.
Absolutely.
One of the stories I want to kind of share from my experience, I've worked in football before, and I was lucky to work at the Olympics, the 2012 London Olympics, and I did the football for them, and I spent a lot of time with the Brazilian team. And it was really interesting watching the Brazilians, because they train, so all the different nations would train in the same massive field, so there'd be Spain, New Zealand, Brazil, and whoever else who was in the area at that time. And watching all the other teams, they'd come out, there'd be cones everywhere, there'd be drills, they'd be doing that, much the way in which the rest of us train. The Brazilian lads come out, penalty shootout, crossbar challenge, keepy uppy, and it was literally that for the whole time, and just went back to the changing rooms. And, you know, I don't know where is it live when the fun bit of it, you know, gets lost in all the regimental bits, and it's tough. You know, it's one of the things that you got to kind of bear in mind. You know, Brazil. You know,
well, it's all about my management as well, isn't it? Really, and that sort of thing. But we had a good time. We still talk about it now, to be honest with you. But I just mentioned here, it's Terry Newton. It's today the 6 years since Terry Newton's passing away. So he's telling everybody's thoughts, and a big sad loss for the game, isn't he?
That's right. Terry, the inspiration behind State of Mind, of course, started after Terry's loss. So I know we've covered a lot of these topics today with a nod and a wink, but there's a serious aspect to it as well.
Oh, absolutely, for you.
Dude, I don't think enough was done. I know obviously State of Mind has come in, and I don't mean that. I think that's fantastic, and that's getting better and better and better. Meanwhile, on the other hand, the rugby league lets teams play with 12 men, which is then battering what you're doing. But I look at the Newton case, and I'm going to say this now. I do not believe he's the only person in rugby league that's ever taken human growth hormone. and yet nothing ever more has come out of that, and I find that quite sad that that has not been looked into further. And you know, it was Terry made a bit of a scapegoat for something that was a bigger case, and I find that quite sad. And I think that every time I hear his name mentioned, I think that's something that maybe as a sport we could have looked into a little bit more.
I think there's lots of issues. I think there's so many we've covered tonight, that there's so many issues in sport and in the wider society in terms of mental health, physical health, and I think on a wider scale, sport's going through a tough time. You know, you look at athletics, it's going through a tough time with athletes taking whatever they can to get an edge, and I think that is a big worldwide issue. So I think there's lots being done, and there's always going to be more that needs to be done.
I just think sometimes it's easy to make it look like you're doing a lot more by pulling the rug out from one person rather than actually investigating a little bit more. And I think there's more work going on now, Alan, as you'll testify, because you're doing a lot of it. I just think, you know, sometimes we need to look at the bigger picture, don't we?
I think that's right. For me, I think obviously Terry Newton's loss is tragic, but Terry's the tip of the iceberg. There are other examples of people that are referees in that game that have taken their life. They're well-known players. But beneath that waterline, beneath that tip of the iceberg, there's just a whole host of mental health problems, physical health problems, the way we manage pain, sleep, prescription medications. That's the depth of the iceberg. Those are the things that are untapped. And now and again, we're just reminded of that by examples like Terry.
Is preservatives in food another one?
In terms of a substance?
Not that I'm aware. I think the supplements is a big issue. So there's you know, there's this whole notion from the UK anti-doping and from WADA, the World Anti-Doping Association, which is that all athletes are... they have this thing called strict liability, which is that every athlete, professional athlete, is responsible for what goes into their body. You know, so a lot of things you might buy, so prescription medication or over-the-counter medication or sore throat remedies or a supplement from a company, if it's got something that's banned in it, they're responsible. And there's lots of ways which athletes can access, you know, medically to see whether something's safe. There's something called Globe Pro, which is an app on your phone which athletes are signposted to. They're not sure, they check something on there so that it will tell them it's banned or it's not banned or whatever. So it's an issue, but the athletes are responsible for their own, you know, they're adults as well, and the Anti-Doping Association have a strict protocol, really, in that they are responsible for their own bodies.
Okay. Right, boys, last chance for your free advert. Phil.uk.com. People listening tonight got a dodgy shoulder or they're a bit worried about something, what do? How do they get in touch?
Yeah, so if we're in the centre of Leeds, just lots of on-site parking. The website's phil.uk.com. Got a Twitter page as well, at phil_uk_com. And it's for anyone, you know, it's not just for elite athletes. We do deal with elite athletes, but we're for anybody. I work on the NHS dealing with sports injuries or people with bad backs, or you win the cleaning with dodgy shoulder or any of that kind of stuff. So if someone's got a problem, either physically or they're worried, you know, someone might have be going for a triathlon or something, thinking, I'm going to do at least 10K and I want to get in the right physical and mental state before going, come along. You know, we've got the full package of everything you'd get if you're an elite athlete. We've got it for the public.
And Alan?
Yeah, very much so. Add to that, people can get more information via our website, phil.uk.com, make a referral through there. We take NHS patients as well as private referrals, and we're covering the whole package of sports medicine, well-being and performance. Thanks for the chance to talk about
it. No problem. If you see Scully walking up the path, are you going to pull the shutters down? Because he's a bit unique.
Welcome with open.
They'll say closed, don't worry about that. But anyway, just a quick hit, Man of Steel for me. Changed my mind. It's been Gareth Ellis till Solomona yesterday. Made history. Denny Solomona, Man of Steel for me.
40 tries, Phil.
Yeah, Gareth Ellis. It's been Gareth Ellis for the last 2 months. He's the catalyst.
Are you going, Phil? Man of Steel, are you going?
I'm not sure at the moment.
Are you going, Mark?
Aren't we on here?
We're on here next week, Scully. So if you get an invite, are you going?
No, I've not been invited. I'm an ex-Man of Steel. I've not been invited.
There you go.
I wonder why.
Someone's trying to tell you something.
Sean Wayne's doctored the guest list.
He has.
Bit arse, boys.
You're going Wigan, Warrington.
Wigan, Warrington for me.
I'm going Saints, Hull.
Warrington, Hull. Repeat the challenge.
So we are split. But, boys, thanks for coming in. We do appreciate it sincerely.
Yeah, brilliant, boys. Thanks very much. Enjoyed that.
continue to revisit ongoing in the future. And don't forget, three live games. Wigan Hull on Friday. Hull KR Salford on Saturday. Will Mr. Peacock's experiment fail or succeed? We'll find out then. And it's Bradford Sheffield. The Bulls! Alan, they're going to be winning again!
Come on, you Bulls!
Brilliant! Hey, come on, you Bulls!
Thank you very much, Mr. Wilson, for sending me there. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to make you watch it. All of it.
Thank you very much.
The champion. Oh, it's not the challenge.
You see, he sent me there plenty of times, Doc. Right, I've had loads of sleep when I got to Bradford on the Sunday afternoons. Oh,
On that note, we are off. That's us done for another week. Thanks for all the interaction. We'll be back more live rugby league Friday.